Welcome to Best Day Audio.
Today's Thursday, May 1st, and I'm Brian Cohen. Stay tuned for an interview with Greg Case, Chief Executive Officer of Aon Corporation, regarding acquisitions and market conditions. Also included in the cast is an interview with Roger Egan, Chief Executive Officer of Integro, regarding the broker's past growth and future profitability. But first, this word.
From offices in Bermuda, Ireland, and the United States, Max Capital Group provides a wide range of niche specialty insurance and reinsurance products for corporations, public entities, property casualty, and life health insurers. Visit maxcapgroup.com.
You're listening to Best Day Audio.
Turning to today's daybook, the Michigan Senate Health Policy Committee has scheduled a vote on one of two competing insurance bills involving oversight of the state's Blue Cross Blue Shield affiliate and rate increases. Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan says it prefers an alternate draft of the bill, which would also create a state high-risk pool administered by Blue Cross to attract last-resort insurance seekers. Also, Assurant Incorporated plans to release its first quarter earnings results for 2008 before the market opens. A company conference call discussing the results is scheduled to air through Assurant's website at 9 a.m. Meanwhile, Fairfax Financial Holdings Limited will release its own first quarter earnings after the trading day ends. And the British Insurance Brokers Association's 30th annual conference and exhibition starts its second day at the Scottish Exhibition and Conference Center in Glasgow, Scotland. In our top news, General Reinsurance Corporation named I. John Konocki as its new president, succeeding Franklin Tad Montrose, who has recently ascended to the chairman and chief executive officer posts. Konocki, who will serve as manager of Genry's global direct property and casualty operations, was also elected to the board of directors at parent company General Re Corporation. In earnings news, HealthNet Incorporated reported a first quarter net loss of $35.7 million, compared with net income of $88.6 million the same period a year ago. Results were hurt by $82.4 million in legal and operation strategy-related pre-tax charges. These included $43.2 million in estimated liability for litigation and regulatory actions related to its practice of rescinding policies in Arizona and California. It also saw $35.8 million in severance and other costs, associated with its operation strategy to achieve substantial reductions in general and administration expenses over the next 3 years. Unum Group's first quarter profit dropped to $163.1 million, a decrease of 8.5% from the same period a year ago. The giant disability insurer said it saw $44.7 million in net realized after-tax investment losses as widening of credit spreads in the investment market continued. Prudential Financial Incorporated's first quarter net income plummeted 92.5% to $77 million. The giant U.S. life insurer saw $678 million in pre-tax net realized investment losses and took charges and adjustments. Revenues rose to $7 billion, an increase of 4.9% from the same period a year ago. An Erie Indemnity Company reported a first quarter net income of $30 million, a 46.8% decrease from the same period a year ago. Revenues for the property casualty insurer were essentially unchanged at $276.3 million. Coming up after the break, Greg Case, CEO of Aon Corporation. You're listening to Best Day Audio.
With 90 years of experience and knowledge to draw from, Munich Re America develops and implements clear solutions to your most complex risk financing problems. Visit www.munichreamerica.com. That's www.munichreamerica.com.
You're listening to Best Day Audio.
This is Alan Ackerman for Best Day Audio. Today we're talking with Greg Case, CEO of Aon Corporation at the RIMS 2008 conference. Good morning, Mr. Case.
Alan, good morning. Good to be here with you this morning.
I guess the first place to start, you've got earnings coming up.
That's correct.
Profits went down a little bit last time. I know you can't talk about it, but are things turning a little bit, or are we just heading into that part of the market where...
Oh, well, as you know very well, Alan, with earnings coming up, I can't say a lot about the quarter. In fact, can't say much at all about the quarter in terms of what's happening. Obviously, we report Thursday night after the close, and we've got a conference call on Friday. Would be delighted if you and others listen in on that. I would just say from an overall perspective, Aon continues to make progress, and we've thought about Aon from the standpoint of our overall game plan to build the preeminent risk advisory firm, human capital management firm in the world. Aon has taken a number of steps over the course of the last few years to build on what was already an incredibly strong foundation to do that. And I would suggest and highlight, I think Aon has made probably as big a bet as any firm in the history of our sector on our sector. What I mean by that is we have divested of our underwriting assets, which are more capital intensive, and taken that and we're focused on what we believe are the two biggest issues facing the global economy today. Risk understanding, two of the biggest, if not the biggest. Risk understanding, risk mitigation, and human capital management. And we have a very strong balance sheet in the context of that, a tremendous amount of capital to address toward that. But it was largely almost a $4 billion bet when you think about it in terms of what we divested and where we stand today.
Obviously, something like that doesn't happen in the short term, but was the thinking behind that divestiture entirely internal in terms of what you were looking at doing within the organization, or was part of it looking out over what's happening with the market, what's happening with the economy, and seeing which way things are going?
Well, everything we do really comes back to an underlying objective, an underlying cornerstone, which is, are we helping our clients succeed? Are we adding value to our clients? And value, everyone talks about, but we talk about value in a very specific way. Are we improving client performance? That's improving their operating performance, yes or no. And or are we strengthening their balance sheet, yes or no. If we're doing one of those two things, we're driving value in clients. And what we did is took a step back and said, how is Aon positioned to do that? How are we going to invest to do that? And how will we be the most distinctive in the world at doing that? We also looked at what our shareholders, how our shareholders viewed us as well. And it turns out that return on invested capital is an important metric for Aon in terms of, and for the entire brokerage industry in terms of how we are viewed. And so the idea that we are going to take steps that would both allow us to invest much more significantly, and I'm going to say Aon's invested almost $800 million in the last 30 months in our business, and we'll invest another $800 million plus in the next 30 months. This is just in smaller acquisitions, but mostly in things that add capability to Aon, teams of colleagues, knowledge, insight, data, analysis. So it really is the day-to-day things that you do to help make your firm stronger. We've invested a tremendous amount in our firm in order to do that. And so our view was what we were going to do is take the steps that would allow us to invest in risk understanding, risk leadership, human capital management, and move away from things that were much more capital intensive. So it was really for us a double positive. We dramatically improve our return on invested capital by getting out of more capital intensive businesses, and we free up capital to invest back in our core business.
There are some brokers that look at acquisitions essentially as buying revenue. And the acquisitions that Aon is doing seem to have a different strategy behind them. It's not simply picking up, you know, $30 million a year in annualized revenue. You're looking at specific kinds of infrastructure, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, Alan, you're absolutely right. Our acquisitions, and we have done 20-plus acquisitions over the last year and a half or so, and spent, you know, almost $250 million in the course of doing that, have a very specific purpose. The acquisitions need to, first of all, help us add capability. So an example of that would be, you know, we looked at the world of sustainability and the world of environmental. We thought at the time one of the most substantial practices in the world on that topic, but that wasn't adequate from our standpoint. The metric we use, the standard we use, is much higher than what the industry is. It's literally, what do our clients need to succeed long term? And felt like we had to build that. So we made an acquisition and brought in a firm, the Brightstone Group. Peter Brightstone was probably the foremost environmental group in the world, to add to our group. We also purchased a firm called Valley Oak, as an example, which added to our risk console and our technology platform that we serve clients with. And it was another example where we felt like there was capability to be added, and we worked very hard to do that and made very significant investments to do that. So we made acquisitions, and we make acquisitions all around the world in a way that either A, adds capability, B, is a strategic acquisition for us, or C, fills geographic gaps to the extent we have those. So you're absolutely right in your question. Our acquisition strategy is very explicit around one of those three objectives.
Within the past few weeks, I don't remember the date on it, Aon issued a reinsurance renewal rates report, fairly grim, in terms of rates going down and clients keeping more for themselves rather than reinsuring out. Overall, as the market continues to soften, as the economy continues to weaken, for the next year or two, obviously without getting into the earnings issues you can't talk about, do you see any part of this turning around, or the pressure on rates going to continue?
Well, one thing I would come back, take a step back from, when you think about rates, and rates are always a big topic of conversation, reflect on our goal. Our goal is to get our clients the best possible terms and conditions at the best possible price. And so from the standpoint, from a client opportunity standpoint, it's been very, very strong, very, very positive from their standpoint. On rates, it's interesting. It's less about the economy. It's more about supply and demand. There's a supply of capital, insurance capital in the world today that's in excess of $500 billion. That's more capital that has existed since pre-9/11. So consider the tragedy of 9/11, Katrina, Rita, Wilma, all the efforts, the things that have gone on over the last few years, and yet the insurance industry has more capital today than it had since pre-9/11. So the supply of insurance capital is substantial, and it outstrips demand at this point in time. That's really what's causing the pressure on price. And to the extent you see that continue, we will continue to have pressure on price. And in fact, the report that we issued on the reinsurance side highlighted that that was in fact going to be the case. All other things being equal, there's still going to tremendous pressure on price will continue.
As the report noted, and I assume this goes not just for reinsurance, but it's going to take a significant catastrophe or series of catastrophes to soak up that excess?
Well, I think we always highlight things that could be shocks to capital. By the way, insurers could do buybacks. They can give back capital to shareholders. Other pressures happen on the investment side. There are a whole range of things that can happen that can impair capital. The report highlighted one category, which was for its catastrophes, right, and highlighted the magnitude. For me, the real insight is the level of supply, as I said before, and how substantial it is and the kind of correction needed in order to get a meaningful movement in rate.
Are you, Aon, beginning to observe the kind of undisciplined underwriting people talk about and when you're in the midst of a soft market?
Listen, we work every day. Aon moves the better part of $60 billion in flow every day around the globe, which is we touch more companies on the topic of risk and risk mitigation than really any firm in the world. We're very fortunate to be able to do that. And as such, we see thousands and thousands and thousands of individual transactions. The work of the underwriters or the markets is very difficult because, in fact, they're applying their capital, their very large, powerful balance sheets, in a very, very distributed decision-making mode. One-off underwriters making decisions all around the globe. And in that context, it's hard to control capital. That's one of their big challenges. So I don't know if it's any more or any less. It's just the reality of how things work. One example that we often reflect on is the difference between severity and frequency. The industry, the underwriting industry, the markets react very well to severity. If something happens, they turn on a dime and they make a great reaction to it. It's much more challenging for the markets to react to frequency. And in fact, our analysis suggests that the lag time is about a year to 18 months. So as an example, right now there are as many D&O suits being brought as there have been in a while, and yet the D&O rates have not adjusted other than in financial services, which would suggest that the frequency is going up and the adjustments not being necessarily made. Colleagues on our side will observe that severity you can correct, but frequency kills in terms of how the rates come out.
Can you discuss how retention has been with Aon for the year so far?
We, again, very careful to discuss anything that relates to any kind of thing that's going to touch our financials. But in the macro term, Aon has been very, very fortunate. And listen, if you think about what our objective is, you know, Aon is a very straightforward firm. We're 36,000 colleagues who get up every day to figure out how we're going to serve clients, period. That's what we do. And in the context of that, serving clients distinctively, serving them in a way that we understand their needs, listen carefully, meet those needs, has really benefited Aon tremendously in terms of what happens with our clients every day, in terms of new clients who are coming in terms of clients we have and the additional services we provide to them, and then how we keep those clients. So, you know, we feel good about our progress.
Within the last couple, 3 weeks, I guess Aon and the other brokers were part of the agreement on the contingency commissions agreement, got the seal of approval for compliance with that. In the last 6 months, Marsh has introduced what they're calling supplemental commissions. There's some talk about whether Willis or Gallagher might do the same. Do you foresee a point where Aon would consider doing something within the restrictions of the agreement along the lines of what was now being called a supplemental commission?
Yeah, we struggle greatly with that. Again, we're a client service firm. We provide services of value to our clients, and we do it in a very transparent way in terms of what we give them and how we are compensated. I would reflect, Alan, it's interesting. We used to be an industry that was opaque. We didn't really have transparency. An outcome of the work a few years ago was transparency. By the way, that's a tremendously positive thing. From our standpoint, buying something that you don't know exactly what you pay for it is just completely unacceptable. So Aon acts in a very transparent way. We're very clear with clients what we provide, very clear what we are paid. And by the way, if it's really the client's judgment on how they like that trade-off.
Right.
In that context, we have the bulk of the rest of the world that's not transparent and that takes contingent commissions, and we have a complete two-tier system.
And four of you and everybody else.
Correct. And now we're actually suggesting a three-tier system. We find that totally unacceptable, completely confusing, and not helpful. So, no, Aon is not considering supplemental commissions. Aon wants to create complete transparency, make sure clients know we get what we get paid, and understand the value. And that really is going to be how we're going to conduct ourselves.
Within the context of the agreement that the four companies are working under, at least two of the other companies that I've talked to say that it makes it difficult to get paid for the value of your services. They feel they need to have some sort of additional.
I can't speak to the other firms. Would never report to be able to speak for the other firms. Sure, they're doing great. For Aon, we provide value. By the way, if a client doesn't understand the value and won't pay for the value, that's our problem, not our client's problem.
Right.
And we're going to, again, step back, make investments to continue to build the capability and value that we provide for clients. And in the context of that, we believe Aon will do great. And when we add value and we make a difference, we do great. If we don't add value, we don't make a difference, and clients don't understand and aren't willing to compensate for that, again, that's a problem with the brokers. That's not a problem with the clients.
Has Aon been in the position of stepping away from a significant contract or business where you just don't think it's worthwhile to take the business?
Again, we struggle. We serve clients. It is interesting, and you're asking the questions quite appropriately, but the questions always get asked in the context and through the views of the broker. That's irrelevant. These are questions through the views and the eyes of a client. And you sit with a client and essentially say, if we can't help them understand the value that we provide and how we should get paid for it, we should have that conversation with each other and we should act accordingly. And that's really what we try to do. Aon is moving through the eyes of a client, not through the eyes of a broker. We're making investments in the context of that. We're bringing in colleagues in the context of that. We're moving people around our firm in the context of that. And we just, for example, made a very significant decision from our standpoint to combine the global assets, the retail assets of Aon under one group called ARS. Steve McGill and Ted Devine lead that group. It literally represents the complete global assets of Aon, so 26,000 colleagues. That's the $60-plus billion of flow. And it really happens under one leadership team now. That's going to enable us to bring global capability to our clients in a very local, personal way. And it's going to increase our ability to do that. And it's going to increase the ability of Aon to bring to bear the best we've got on behalf of our clients. That, to us, is going to be unbelievably powerful in terms of adding additional value to clients. Those are the kinds of things that we're doing, the steps we're taking. And they're, by the way, they're required when you look at how the world's evolving through the eyes of a client versus through the eyes of a broker. So it isn't about supplemental commissions and how we're going to get paid here or there. It's literally, what are we doing every day that's going to help improve a client's performance? And how are we mobilizing our firm in the context of trying to do that?
Is this in a sense of, from the client's end, simplifying the whole process? Is it a more focused way for them to deal with you?
In fact, that's a very, very appropriate, very insightful in terms of what we're doing. Aon is a much simpler organization as we continue to evolve. And in fact, in many respects, Aon is three global firms in retail, reinsurance, and consulting. And three initiatives that we're driving globally around, one around client leadership, one around people leadership, and one around how we effectively operate as a firm, operational excellence. So in essence, Aon, which is a product of many acquisitions, has, as we have coordinated all those acquisitions and we have coordinated what we're doing on the revenue side and on the operations side, have evolved to a firm that is three global businesses and three global initiatives. And we want to make it as simple and straightforward as possible for our clients to understand our firm and understand the value that we bring.
I interviewed Pat Ryan four weeks ago about his retirement. Mm-hmm. Part of the conversation that we had involved the sale, the divestiture that you recently made. He said that actually that was planned to happen sometime earlier and events precluded that. Was there anything timing-wise that made this past year the right time?
I think that the timing was much more around post the analysis. The time was much more around how the rest of Aon was evolving and all the things we were doing. And understand Combined is a phenomenal, it's a great firm. The two folks who purchased pieces of Combined, Ace and Munich, I believe have fantastic franchises and will do incredibly well with them. In many respects, sorry to see them go. They were just a firm, a composition, because they were much more capital intensive and much more underwriting focused, or more underwriters, that it just didn't fit in the overall context. And once we got comfortable with that, the timing was just much more natural.
And again, that's a simplification of the business?
Sure, absolutely. Again, back to Aon's three businesses. Right. It's a retail business, a reinsurance business, and human capital management. And really two categories, as I said before. Reinsurance and retail are all around understanding risk, mitigating risk, helping clients take action against if you are an environment of risk. And the other one is around human capital management. It's just a much more simple organization.
I've covered the last reorganization and improvement plan that was announced, and there was one that I believe we're in the final year of, and I guess we're in the beginning of the other. What is the status of the two? How do those flow together?
Well, what I would suggest, again, back to, you first start with the premise that Aon has phenomenal assets. So, you know, I joined Aon 3 years ago. I was privileged and blessed to come into Aon. It's a phenomenal firm. With great capability. And the efforts we're taking are really just to coordinate how we work together as colleagues around the firm to deliver to clients on the front end, the revenue part of our business, and how we coordinate the many, many different acquisitions that we had taken on the back end of our business. Simple as that. So the reorganizations are really more just efforts, a set of ongoing efforts that are in place in order to do that. And as such, you know, one of the efforts focused more on the first effort, more on the U.S. and the U.K. Now we have an effort focused a bit more on Europe, and we're just going to continue to evolve in a very thoughtful, methodical way to help build our firm. And so they're quite natural set of series of steps that we're taking that are meant to create, build on what Aon's already got to make it a stronger firm to serve our clients.
Part of those plans involve the elimination of some 6,000 jobs. Does that affect morale within the company at all?
In fact, I would suggest right now, and you should talk to colleagues around Aon, the morale in Aon is for our colleagues to, I guess, to judge and decide. But, you know, you're walking around RIMS right now. You have a sense for the feel of what's happening at RIMS right now. Go to our exhibits and what we're doing. Talk to the clients at our events. I think our clients are as excited about Aon as they've ever been before. I've spent, by the way, the last 2 days talking to clients, you know, all day, both days, just connecting and understanding. And I think there's more energy through their eyes, as I said before. Everything we're doing at RIMS here is all about our clients. This is kind of we call it client world, and I think there's tremendous energy there. There's also tremendous energy across the Aon colleagues, driven by what's happening in clients. Aon has got operating momentum that my colleagues have driven. Greg Case has not driven at all. My colleagues around the world have driven, and it's in many respects is unprecedented. It's a tremendous time to be at Aon. This is, in many respects, we believe, our time to really do things in our firm that haven't been done before in the risk industry. We have full respect for the other competitors out there. I'm sure they're fantastic firms. It's not about them, and we hope them the best, and I'm sure they'll succeed very well. This is about us and our clients, and we're incredibly excited globally about what we're doing. And we're investing more and more in the context of our firm. So the reduction of people, particularly colleagues who are very important to us, who are more on the support side, and investing back into the front office side is actually quite powerful and quite important to us, and has generated a tremendous amount of momentum and positive feeling.
Thank you very much.
Good to talk to you.
Coming up after the break, Roger Egan, CEO of Integro. You're listening to Best Day Audio.
Comet Online Learning is the American Institute of Certified Property Casualty Underwriters' new professional development tool. Insurance professionals can't afford gaps in technical knowledge that affect their performance. Comet Online Learning is a cost-effective, convenient solution. Visit www.aicpcu.org.
You're listening to Best Day Audio.
This is Alan Ackerman with Best Day Audio, speaking with Roger Egan of Integro at the RIMS 2008 conference.
Mr. Egan, thank you for talking with us. We're coming up in May, I believe, on the 3-year anniversary of Integro, 2 full years of operation. I know that you've discussed certain benchmarks that you'd like to see the company hit this year, next year. How are you doing on those?
We're doing pretty well, Alan. Thank you for asking. We have, as you said, completed 2 full years of operation. We raised our money in the middle of 2005 and spent the balance of the year getting licensed and hiring people. We're ready. We're open for business, really, in the beginning of 2006.
Your starting capital was?
Our beginning capital was $320 million, which was, I think it was the largest venture capital deal in the United States in 2005. We raised a fair amount of money because we had a fairly ambitious plan to build out a largely North American footprint, opening up offices in New York, Chicago, San Francisco, Atlanta, and in Canada, in Toronto and Montreal, and also have international operations in 2 important market centers, Bermuda and London. So that was really the reason to raise so much money, to build out a network that was largely North American but had between 8 to 10 offices to start. We finished 2007 with a pretty strong result. Our revenues, our total revenues, were a little bit less than $60 million. And what I'm most proud of is our organic growth rate in 2007 was 110%. So we are not acquiring businesses. We are growing. We are winning business in the marketplace. And I think that organic growth rate compares to an industry average of a little bit more than 1% organic growth. So 2007 was a successful year, and the beginning of 2008 has also been continued successful growth for Integra.
Has the soft market cycle hampered your ability to grow the company along the plan that you started with?
Not really. I think a soft market is, generally speaking, not good for a broker, soft rating we're talking about, but it has a larger effect on larger, more established brokers where their renewal book of business might be shrinking. Since the majority of our business each year is new business, it has less of an effect on Integra than it does our competitors.
And the slowdown in the economy obviously can't be helpful to a broker.
No. Slowdown in the economy probably hurts all businesses. Your clients aren't growing, so they don't give you the investment opportunities that come along with that, or the growth opportunities that come along with their investments. But we're small, and we're interested in gaining market share, and that slowdown I don't think has a profound effect on Integra's business plan. An interesting aspect, like the subprime crisis, can actually have a beneficial effect on Integra's business, because rates for financial institutions and the premiums for directors and officers' liability, et cetera, will probably go up because of that kind of a crisis.
Some bit of a silver lining back there in all the grief.
Well, there's a lot of risk in the world, and people are aware of it. And our business is consulting on risk, and when there's a subprime crisis, it just makes everybody aware that there's business is risky.
But one of the benchmarks you've discussed in the past is becoming profitable at some point in 2009. Is Integra on track for that? And do you think that turning that corner in 2009 is significant for the company?
It's definitely significant for us to become a profitable enterprise, and we are not right now. However, at the end of 2007, we had a little bit less than half of the capital that we raised, and we are spending our capital judiciously and growing the company. When we become break-even is somewhat dependent upon how fast we choose to spend our capital, and we're going to be careful and judicious about it. It doesn't really matter that much whether it's late 2009 or early 2010. It really is largely a function of how quickly we spend the capital and how quickly we grow the company. If we believe there's an opportunity to grow more quickly, we'll invest and spend more quickly. On the other hand, if we think the growth is slowing, we'll slow down the expenditure.
I think a point you're making is also that if you're not spending as much as you thought as quickly, you're also not spending. Your expenses are not as great as they were.
Absolutely.
Europe, Bermuda are the key parts of the international operation for Integra?
Integra's international operation, well, first I guess you say Canada, but I view that as kind of a North American strategy. Beyond North America, the key strategy is to be in market centers like Bermuda and London. Beyond those market centers, we are not planning to expand and open up offices in international territories, foreign countries, but we do have a preferred partnership strategy with major independent brokers in the largest economies throughout the world, and we've probably consummated about 8 of those already and are looking to do another 12 within the next 12 to 24 months.
These would be reciprocal agreements?
They're reciprocal agreements. They are preferred partnership agreements. They're formalized with various independent brokers, and they're mutually beneficial. They're usually not exclusive because we reserve, the right if any client wants to direct us to use a particular broker in a particular country, we'll always abide by our client's wishes.
Right. But these are, under normal circumstances, these partners are who you go to first?
Yes.
And
yes.
Vice versa?
Yes. We would prefer to deal with these established partners in their market and hope that they would prefer to deal with us in our market, being North America.
Is Integro looking beyond Europe, beyond Bermuda and Canada, looking at emerging markets or other places?
The way we look at emerging markets, which are considered to be great growth opportunities, our very strong London operation is a source for business from anywhere in the world. So countries as remote as Russia, China, India, which are the fastest growing emerging markets, they bring business into the London market, and we have a really great team of London experts that can help us grow with those emerging market growths.
Is there a specific focus in Canada? Are you looking to the oil and energy business in Canada?
We're not focused on a particular industry in Canada. We have broad geographic representation with a large office in Toronto, a smaller office, but a full service office in Montreal, and more recently a new office in Vancouver. So we've got both coasts and the center of Canada pretty much covered. If we were to make a foray into the energy business, then we might open up an office in Calgary, but there are no plans to do that right now.
This is Alan Ackerman. We've been speaking with Roger Egan, CEO of Integro, at the 2008 RIMS Conference.
A recent podcast of interest includes Wednesday, April 30th, where we spoke with J. Patrick Gallagher, Chair, President, and Chief Executive of Arthur J. Gallagher & Company, regarding the company's acquisition strategy. Also included in the April 30th cast is an interview with Alistair Groom, Chief Executive of Charles Taylor & Company Limited, which operates the Standard Protection and Indemnity Club, regarding the state of shipping insurance amid a strong international trade environment. Listen every day for a summary of the day's news and every Monday for a discussion of what's happening in Best Week. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to today's Best Day Audio. All items are copyright of the AM Best Company. Best Day Audio features selected news stories from Best Day Print Edition. Full versions of these, along with other articles not heard in today's broadcast, can be read online at bestday.ambest.com with a subscription to Best's Review or Best Week. Check out the latest news at ambest.com/newsroom. Send comments to news@ambest.com. Have a best day.